40 greetings to our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Saturday is a big day in international football. The 24-team Women's World Cup kicks off in Edmonton, Canada, and Barcelona will play Juventus for the biggest prize in European club football, the UEFA Champions League trophy in Berlin, Germany. Ladies first, the month-long Women's World Cup begins with a Group A match between host Canada and China. And that will be followed on Saturday by a game between New Zealand and the Netherlands, also in Edmonton. The 2015 Women's World Cup is the first to be played on artificial turf, and that's a controversial issue since players say it makes them more susceptible to injuries. In fact, 84 players from 13 different national women's teams called artificial turf substandard and dangerous in a planned lawsuit, but they dropped the legal action ahead of the tournament. American star Abby Wambach, one of the players involved, says while the legal action is over, it marks the start of even greater activism to ensure fair treatment when it comes to women's sports. The players say FIFA and the Canadian Soccer Association would never dream of asking top men's footballers to play a World Cup on artificial turf. The Sunny Side of Sports supports Abby Wambach and is hoping this seventh edition of the Women's World Cup will be the last to be played on artificial turf. Now, previous editions of this women's tournament featured 16 teams. With the field expanded to 24, it's given new opportunities for countries to make their marks in women's football. Of the three African teams in Canada, two of them, Cameroon and Ivory Coast, are playing in their inaugural Women's World Cup. Both African sides figure to have a tough time getting out of the group stage. Cameroon will have to contend with Ecuador, Switzerland, and reigning world champion Japan. Ivory Coast, meanwhile, is grouped with Thailand, 1995 world champion Norway, and two-time world champion Germany. The Super Falcons of Nigeria have been the most successful team in African women's football over the years. But the Nigerian women also have their work cut out for them in Canada. They're in a tough group with Australia, Sweden, and the two-time world champion United States. Let's take a quick look at the opening matches for the three African teams. Ivory Coast will play Germany in its first match on Sunday. Cameroon and Nigeria will begin their campaigns the next day on Monday. Cameroon will meet Ecuador, while Nigeria will play Sweden. Now let's go to New Zealand for an update on the FIFA Under-20 World Cup for men. The Black Satellites of Ghana defeated Panama Friday 1-0 in Auckland to finish atop the Group B table with 7 points from three matches. Emmanuel Boateng scored the goal for Ghana in the 82nd minute. Ghana will travel to Wellington, New Zealand for its next match on June 10th in the round of 16. The opponent is still to be determined. In Friday's other Group B match, Austria and Argentina battled to a scoreless draw in Wellington. The Austrians are through to the knockout stage with 5 points from three matches, while Argentina is packing its bags for home with 2 points from the tournament. In Group A results Friday, host New Zealand trounced Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, 5-1, and Ukraine beat the United States 3-0. The Ukrainians and the Americans are through to the round of 16 knockout stage with 7 and 6 points, respectively. In Berlin on Saturday, Barcelona of Spain and Juventus of Italy will meet in the UEFA Champions League final. Juventus defender Giorgio Chiellini has been ruled out of Saturday's big match with a calf injury suffered in training on Wednesday. Barcelona appears to have no injury concerns before the big game, and with Chiellini out, that could make it easier for Barcelona's star-studded attack featuring Lionel Messi, Neymar, and Luis Suarez. Juventus is bidding for its third European title, while Barcelona is aiming for its fifth European crown. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. New research says African-American athletes are more likely to be portrayed negatively in the media than white athletes. The findings appear in a new book entitled How You See Me, How You Don't. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Cynthia Frisbee is an associate professor at the University of Missouri's School of Journalism. As part of her strategic communication course, she challenges her students to face any biases they may have when reporting a story. Her interaction with her students eventually led her to research media coverage of male athletes and whether black and white athletes receive different treatment. Frisbee chose 155 online news articles from Sports Illustrated, The Bleacher Report, CNN, CBS Sports, Sporting News, Yahoo Sports, AOL, Sports Service, and ESPN.
Of the total stories, 68 or 43.9% were on white athletes, and 38.7% were on black.
She identified a number of themes, including crime, domestic violence, moral success or failure, cheating, lifestyle, and individual accomplishments. She begins with her findings on crime-related stories.
66.7% of the stories were on crime that dealt with black athletes, compared to 22.2% for white. When it came to domestic and sexual violence stories, 70.6% focused on the black athlete, whereas 17.6% were on white. When it came to training, work ethic, their dedication, 42.9% were focused on white athletes, where 35.7% were on black.
Frisbee gives more of her findings.
The morally successful stories, 83.3% were on white athletes, where there was only one story which amounted to 8.3% on black athletes. Accomplishments, 20 of the stories, 58.8% were white, whereas 8 stories or 23.6% were black. On their personal lifestyle, 42.9% were white versus 33.3% black. And then athletics or skills or abilities, 46.2% were about white athletes, and then 23.1% or 3 stories were on black.
One thing her research did not reveal was the race of the reporters behind the stories.
You know, honestly, that's something that I want to do in the future. It was very, very hard to determine by their bylines. And then we tried to do that, but it was just taking an immense amount of time because, you know, we'd have to go to the newspaper site and then look up their staff.
Frisbee says she wants her students to consider whether media portrayals of African Americans are reflected in how they report.
When it comes to blacks, there are 3 typical portrayals that we find in the media: criminal, entertainer, or athletic.
She says a 2013 study shows many Americans believe black athletes are criminals. She questions whether that perception stems from modern TV, films, and other media.
A lot of times people would say when I was talking about my research, well, isn't it true that athletes are more aggressive? and I went to the crime rate and statistics numbers and was, again, a little surprised to find that athletes in general, regardless, commit fewer crimes than the regular male in their same age group.
She also says media portrayals of African Americans may even affect how her students react to her.
So, for example, I'm an African American professor, and I will have students that sometimes the only experience or contact that they've had with someone like me is through the media. And you would be surprised at how much media consumption plays a role in our attitudes and our formation of particular kinds of stereotypes.
One such portrayal of African Americans, she says, is found in rap music.
We know white suburban boys love rap music. What if you see these images and then you get to me, which I violate all of that? How do you respond to that disparity and discrepancy of what you've come to know through the media, and now you've met somebody that doesn't fit? Do you discount her?
The University of Missouri journalism professor says her research is just a first step. While she hopes it raises awareness for today's reporters, it also raises many questions about how stereotypes are formed and affect behavior. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In Game 1 of the National Basketball Association Finals, the Golden State Warriors defeated the visiting Cleveland Cavaliers 108-100 in overtime. Golden State star Stephen Curry, the league's most valuable player, had 26 points and 8 assists, while Cavaliers star LeBron James fired in 44 points, a career high for him in the NBA Finals. LeBron missed 20 shots from the field, though, including a long jumper at the end of regulation. The Warriors took control in the overtime period, while the Cavaliers missed their first 8 shots in the extra session. Golden State is in the NBA Finals for the first time in 40 years. Cleveland, meanwhile, is hoping for its first major professional sports championship in 51 years. Speaking after the loss, Cavaliers coach David Blatt says his team will need to do more around LeBron in Game 2, which will be played Sunday night in Oakland. Remember, VOA basketball fans, the NBA Finals are best of 7, so the first team to win 4 games will be crowned the champion. Adding to Cleveland's frustration after the loss was 3-time All-Star guard Kyrie Irving limping to the locker room after aggravating a left knee injury in the overtime period. Warriors coach Steve Kerr, who was a guard in the NBA before becoming a coach, says he hopes Irving is able to play the remainder of the series. In Kerr's words, and I quote, "I mean that. You probably don't believe me, but I mean that." Believe this, Sunny Side of Sports fans. I want to give a shout out from my Voice of America engineer this evening, Sule Terawali. Kick it, Sule!
Kick it!
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Thanks, Joe. That's Joe DiCapua, the managing editor of our Africa News Tonight radio show. And you can hear another edition of Africa News Tonight immediately following the Sunny Side of Sports at 1800 UTC. Ghana's new minister of youth and sports, Dr. Mustafa Ahmed, recently climbed between the ropes with Nnamdi Moeta at the Wild Card Boxing Club in Los Angeles, California. Nnamdi asked the minister, how do you plan to revive boxing in Ghana?
First and foremost, to unify the community, the boxing, the entire boxing community in the country. Bring them all under one federation, that's the Ghana Boxing Federation. And then I think with that, we can move together and make sure that we bring progress to the sport of boxing in Ghana.
What are the challenges that you currently face in implementing some of these plans?
Well, obviously, for every developing country like Ghana, funding is the key challenge, and especially in the face of numerous competing needs that are coming up, health, education, and so on and so forth. So sports gets the short end of the stick, and I believe that if we are able to unite the entire community, we should be able to attract the attention of the government as well as the private sector to come to the aid of boxing. In so doing, we'll be able to also address the issues of infrastructure, because we do not have adequate boxing gyms, even the equipment that is needed, the facilities for bringing people together, and then so on and so forth. So we need to do that to ensure that we attract a lot of investment from the private sector and let it be seen as a place where people can invest their money in, and then it will yield dividends to them as well as to the youth who will be taken up to boxing as a sport.
With a country such as Ghana facing issues like power crisis, economy, labor agitations, what is the significance of a boxing gym? Why the focus on the boxing?
Well, I believe in the adage that man must not live by bread and water alone. And therefore, in the face of all these other crises that you've mentioned, we still need to explore the opportunities that are available in sports, especially in the areas where Ghana has had made name, where we have a comparative advantage, where we have established ourselves as good on the continent. If you take football, you take athletics, you take boxing, we have distinguished ourselves in those areas. And therefore, it stands to reason that if we want to focus on these sports, it will yield a lot more dividend, especially the benefits that it has or it holds for the youth, particularly from deprived communities, people who perhaps otherwise wouldn't have made it through the regular education channels, who can also take advantage of the opportunities in these areas of sports and make it.
What brings you to Hollywood?
Hollywood has made fame not only in filmmaking but also in providing adequate facilities for people who have made name in boxing. So I'm here in particular to look at some of the boxing gyms that have been able to attract the great boxing talents in the world, and where they have trained, use the facilities there to train and attained greater heights, so that we can also replicate something like that in Ghana.
Honorable Minister, you're here with us at the famous Wildcard Boxing Gym, where one of the best trainers train fighters, and Manny Pacquiao trained for his mega fight. Why did you come to Wildcard?
I think that in Ghana, we follow what we think is good. And therefore, coming to Wildcard, as you've mentioned, this is the place where world champions have trained. And it is better to come here, see what it is that has made them champions, and try and replicate same back at home, and give opportunities to our boxers to also attain greater heights in boxing. Wildcard has made name and is famous. It's like one of the top places for training boxers in the world. Not only in America, but it's a world-class training facility. And therefore, my decision to go there, and then I have to express gratitude to Freddie Roach for receiving me and allowing me to tour the facility and seeing what it takes to produce great world boxing champions. And perhaps with his support, encouragement that I got from him, we should be able to replicate something like that in Ghana, to also offer opportunities for Ghanaian boxers to also attain greater heights.
In Africa, the focus has always been soccer, you know, from the president down to the minister, you know, to everybody, soccer. Do you see a chance where a country like Ghana can produce great champions like they did in the past?
Indeed, that is one of the key visions of the president, the current president of Ghana, President John Dramani Mahama. His vision is to offer opportunities, invest in the other sporting disciplines, continue to invest in football, but let us also pay attention to the other disciplines, because in the past we've been able to produce great champions in athletics, in boxing. Ghana in the past has produced number of champions in boxing: Floyd Robertson, DK Poison, Azumah Nelson, Ike Corte, King Kong Agbeko, Fred Lawson, Nana Yao, and then also Baba Sumaila, our own Baba Sumaila, who has made a name for himself and is one of the few, or perhaps the only African boxing trainer at the Wildcard Gym here in LA. And I think that this is a plus for Ghana. We are hoping that if we are able to do something similar in Ghana, we should be able to attract all these personalities to support and promote the sport of boxing in Ghana.
Honorable Minister, you've just finished visiting the Wildcard Gym right here in Hollywood. What are the chances of we having something like this on the ground in Accra, Ghana?
Well, we needed this yesterday in Ghana, but with the vision and then what I've seen here at Wildcard, I'm more inspired to now push even stronger ahead to ensure that within the next 1 year, we have something going in Ghana.
That's Dr. Mustafa Ahmed, Ghana's Minister of Youth and Sports, and he was talking with Namdi Hollywood Moweta at the Wildcard Boxing Gym in Los Angeles, California. This VOA programming note, I greatly enjoyed being guest host this week on our hashtag VOA TV program, which focused on Special Olympics. Special Olympics is the world's largest sports organization for children and adults with intellectual disabilities, providing training and competitions for almost 5 million athletes in about 170 countries. One of the guests on hashtag VOA was Tim Shriver, whose late mother, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, founded Special Olympics almost 50 years ago. Tim is the chairman of Special Olympics, the same position his late father, Sergeant Shriver, held with the organization. I asked Tim Shriver How did your parents inspire you to carry the torch of Special Olympics?
The biggest lesson they taught me, and I think they taught it to so many other people, is that it was really important to commit yourself to something that will change the world, make it a little bit better. Even if your contribution is small, give your best to making the world a little bit better. The second thing they taught is you can have fun doing that. It doesn't always have to be hard work and labor. It can also be joy. And my mother in particular believed that sport was a way that we could teach one another very important lessons. Lessons about trust, about confidence, lessons about teamwork and camaraderie, lessons about learning to understand and accept one another as teammates. And so we have in Special Olympics this great combination, I think it's almost unmatchable, of being gladiators for justice, fighting against intolerance, fighting against the neglect that exists around the world for people with intellectual differences, but at the same time doing it by having a good time, playing our way into the hearts and minds of millions and millions of people around the world, and by playing our way into their hearts, we hope, encouraging them to be more tolerant and accepting and welcoming of all their brothers and sisters who are different.
Tim, I mentioned the broad reach of Special Olympics. It goes all over the world.
Yeah.
Can you talk about growth in, say, Africa and Asia?
Well, we have now almost 5 million athletes who participate at least once during the year in a Special Olympics event in their community. 1 million in China, 1 million in India. Over 100,000 in sub-Saharan Africa and around the world, all throughout the Middle East, in countries that have struggled with war, like Afghanistan and Rwanda, countries that have fast-growing economies like China and India, countries with older civilizations like Japan and Korea. All of these places have welcomed the athletes of Special Olympics because I think the unifying power of sport, everybody loves to play, no matter what age, but also the compelling nature of the challenge to change. So we're lucky to boast a movement that was, yes, born in the United States, conceived by an American woman, athlete, which is rare in the annals of great social change movements, but now is owned and shared really by the entire world, a world that has embraced volunteerism, embraced the power of sport, and embraced the civil rights movement that is this movement for people with intellectual differences who still are so misunderstood.
We saw that torch relay at the opening of the program,
yeah.
And I know one Special Olympics athlete in particular, you kind of gave a shout out for as part of that relay.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, Marty, I lit the flame, carried the flame for Marty Sheets. Marty Sheets died just about 10 days ago. He was a young man born with Down syndrome in North Carolina. He grew up in a time when nobody would have expected to see him in a village or in a town or in a city, in a school. His mother and father pushed him to be included. He ended up being selected because of his swimming to go to the first ever Special Olympics Games in 1968. Again, getting on a plane for the first time. These are all new experiences. Marty might have been an uncommon sight in his time, but he did something equally uncommon, which is he changed the way people saw Down syndrome. Marty helped people not to see Down syndrome, but to see Marty. And at the age of 62, his death marked the end of a great pioneer of justice and social change, and he inspires me every day, even now.
That's Tim Shriver, the chairman of Special Olympics, and he spoke with me at our Voice of America studios here in Washington. And mark your calendars, the Special Olympics World Games will be held in Los Angeles, California, from July 25th to August 2nd.
Hi, I'm Segun Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is, and every Sunday I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game on.
This is for the world. Just come and play with
this.
Me.
Is for the globe.
And that wraps up another 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America engineer Sule Terawali working the boards with fine form this evening. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.